Hi, everybody. Welcome to Their Spiritual Truth. We were about 20 minutes into doing an Edgar Cayce show. We're with, this is really a cool thing, with David Wilcox, and we were really getting into the, what would you say, David, into the
meat of the story of...
Of how or why David would
where the connection actually is, the story.
Yeah, I'm a little shook, and all of a sudden, this has never happened, the radio just shut down and said, debug, we're stopping, debug. And I said it to David, and you didn't seem at all shocked.
No, not at all.
And your answer was, why did this happen?
Well, again, the rabbit hole's about to get a lot deeper here, but the fact of the matter is that my understanding is that the Battle of Armageddon has been going on for quite some time, and it's basically a spiritual battle between what you could call spiritual good guys and spiritual bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the spiritual bad guys can't actually, except in a very few cases, they cannot materialize or do anything that's really damaging. But what they can do, among other things, is manipulate electronic devices. And they don't do it unless they think that there's going to be a strong enough reason to exert that much effort.
And we were talking about Edgar Cayce, my friendship with Hugh Lynn, and how Edgar had, I mean, just to catch you back up, we discussed Edgar's demons and how hard it was to be Edgar. I mean, doing such fabulous work, and to this day, still one of the most glorified men in our field, I think, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
And he had issues with, he was a huge spiritual, he was very religious, but he also had a problem with alcohol, and he had a problem with infidelity. And he wasn't trying to hide that. He was just trying to struggle with it. And he decided to be about 130 years old. And I'm just kind of recapping.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have radios or television, so he could be some big fancy psychic and medium making a fortune on TV on the Learning Channel or on NBC. He just was helping people. And for very little money, as I recall, he would just go into trance. They'd send him a letter. And he helped people. In fact, when we're the only company that I know of today, there was a documentary at Virginia Beach. We were invited. And one of the things they told us to do if you weren't feeling well was to go out and Edgar used to tell people to go out and bury themselves in the sand.
That's
Did you know
true.
That?
That's true. And there's a lot of gold in that Virginia sand.
Yeah, and so we would go out and we would bury ourselves like kids in the sand just for the fun of it. I mean, Joel Martin and I and my husband and a bunch of us who were doing the show was really quite wonderful. But then Hugh Lynn passed away, and Maria Moreno told him not to have that surgery. And Maria Moreno was actually his father's medium psychic when she was a very young girl from Mexico. And she told Hugh Lynn not to go have those surgeries. And he did, and then the rest is history. Hugh Lynn is no longer with us. He has not been with us for, what, 10 years? Maybe
yeah,
12
more
years,
than that,
more,
yeah.
12 years, 13. Last time I saw Hugh Lynn, I was in Cleveland as a reporter. I was reporting for CBS in Cleveland. And he had a wonderful group of men on stage talking about everything you can imagine. So now, David, I saw David's name at a venue, at something I went to just to meet William Henry. And it said, David Wilcox, reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. So this is where we were before this silly thing just stopped. And he was telling, I asked him what made him think he was Edgar Cayce.
Now, did we lose that previous file or do we not know?
Well, it says not, but I wouldn't trust it. So let's just go there again.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was strange.
Well, to cut right to the chase. I was very psychic when I was born. My mother said that she tried to touch the doorknob to leave the apartment long enough to just go get the laundry, and I'd immediately wake up and start crying, which freaked her out. But she also had strange UFO dreams before I was born and felt that there was some kind of spiritual purpose for why this child was being born. And I think every mother has that. It's kind of like a Mary complex.
No,
but
I didn't have it. I have three children. No. No, right. I mean, I love my children, but they weren't, you know, they weren't doing, one said she was a Martian, but she'll tell me. I wrote an article in UFO magazine, so that's not, if you go on the site, you'll see UFO magazine, my favorite Martian. But no, that you had to be a little bit unusual, because most mothers I know, no.
Well, she said that she felt like there was a heavy spiritual purpose for why this kid was being born, and then it started to be very odd when she couldn't leave me. But another thing that was really strange about me as a baby was I was very serene and I didn't cry. I just sort of gaze into your eyes and be there with you, you know, but I wouldn't like freak out and, you know, get into a hissy fit.
Did you kind of like calm people or start healing people or start telling people things that they should know at an early age?
Yeah, all that stuff definitely happened. I was very telepathic. I knew what people were thinking. I knew what was going to happen before it happened.
And then when that happened, when you grew up, did you go to school, regular school, and go to college and all kinds of stuff?
Yeah, I went through the regular school system, and I was very advanced for my age. I was in a program called Pyramid Program for gifted children because mm-hmm. I was about 2 grades ahead in my reading level. Mathematics, science, all that stuff was off the chart.
Well, I could tell that in the last show we just did that we lost. You should have heard that one. I don't think anybody would have understood it anyway, just why we lost it. At any rate, I was like, what?
I try not to... I don't want to brag about these things, but I'm just telling you what I know.
I'm not bragging. I need
to
know.
I took the SAT test in 7th grade, and I scored as well as the average high school senior would.
So then you went to university.
I went to university, and it was in the second year of university that I found out from my good friend that his college professor worked for NASA through the 1970s, and it was common knowledge in the higher echelons that the Roswell crash was real, among others.
Oh, yeah.
And that they'd reverse-engineered technology, which we're now using, like Velcro, Teflon, LED lights, computer chips, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything, much of the technology that we now enjoy, which is making this whole interview possible, is part of a celestial endowment.
Yes.
And that sort of was the explosive moment that all of us on the path have had, where you suddenly realize, oh my gosh, there's more to this world than just this physical reality that we've been lied to about for so long.
So that was in your second year of college.
That was in my second year of college, and it utterly changed everything. I had been sober for 6 months when that happened. I did have a issue with marijuana for 4 years. I now have 15 years of clean time. Also, when that explosion started, when I got clean, actually, 6 months before this disclosure about the UFO thing happened, 6 months prior to that, I had had the beginning of my dream work, and I have been writing my dreams down every single morning for 15 years and following the guidance. So that's been going on since September 1992.
And does marijuana hurt? I never touched it myself, but does it hurt the brain? I mean, why do you say clean? That wasn't drinking. Most people don't think marijuana is a big deal. Is it a big deal?
I call it the five-leaf lesson.
Good.
It will open your circuits to a point, and then it dulls them.
What do you mean?
You part of the way there, and then it restricts you from going further. That's the problem.
So further meaning in your spiritual...
Further in your spiritual vibration, your ability to access the unseen realms.
Do antidepressants and things like that they put kids on, do they do the same thing?
I'm sad to say that they do, yeah. With SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac and Zoloft, it's basically gluing serotonin into the synapses longer than your body wants them to be there.
And then what happens?
And when you start using drugs that, as the one channeled material says, disrupts the mind spectrum, it does have an effect on the subtle body and the junction points between the subtle body and the physical body, and that in turn restricts your ability to access higher consciousness.
Oh, and so that's why there are... Is this sort of like a plan for people to walk around like you know, zombies?
Yes.
Would this be the good light?
The insiders in our black government are very well aware of what they call the transient body, which is their name for the soul. And it's funny that they call it transient because you usually think of like a homeless person. And they are aware of energy fields, which the Russians call torsion fields, or which I might call the consciousness field. And they know that, for example, power lines, RF frequencies, will disrupt it and disrupt that frequency balance in your brain. They know that fluoride in the water will disrupt it. So there are definitely usable technologies out there that can further dumb people down. The diet is very important because natural living foods contain something called microclusters, which are these little sacred geometry clusters of atoms and molecules. And those little sacred geometries form sort of like an antenna to spirit. And when you're eating dead, devitalized food like fast food and so forth,
what
you find is that it doesn't have any microclusters in it at all.
What about the clone food?
Oh, same kind of stuff. So you might very well be nurturing the physical body with vitamins and minerals and fatty acids and proteins, but as far as the energy body goes, you might be starving.
So they don't want us to be very spiritual.
No, and another thing they don't want you to do is get out in the sun. So they keep telling you, oh, my God, you're going to get skin cancer. You got to only go outside if you got suntan lotion on.
Why don't they want us in the sun?
Because the sun is the best engine we have to revitalize the soul. You go out for even 15 minutes.
And you feel better.
yeah, the rods and cones in the eye are tethered to the endocrine system.
Uh-huh.
So when you get full spectrum light hitting your retina, that actually tunes up your endocrine system. What we end up doing is we live in these, you know, these fiberglass and plaster enclosures where we're looking at artificial spectrum from the computer and from fluorescent light bulbs.
Yeah.
And that totally messes up your endocrine system. So you need to get out in the direct sunlight without sunglasses on. I do recommend sunscreen on your face for the effects of aging, but other than that, just go out there.
And you live in Malibu. I mean, you're out,
I do.
You're out in the sun all the time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and but the, but we're doing the show because David, and I've been told by other people, is they're again with the question mark. I don't know who put the question mark there, but they believe...
Well, that was deliberate.
Okay, they believe that David is the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and so I just want to ask questions. What makes you think that? Or whoever thinks it. Whoever put the question mark there, I don't know.
Well, six months after I got sober, as I said, is when I heard about this Roswell crash and that there were technologies from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that fired me off on a 3-year adventure, which has really never stopped, but I say 3 years because that's what happened before the next thing. 3 years where I just went, I was getting a bachelor's in psych, and I was working on my PhD in spirituality.
Yeah.
And one of the books I read is Ruth Montgomery, actually.
I loved her. She was my teacher.
Yeah, and I remember you saying that. So I read the book Aliens Among Us that she wrote, several others that she wrote, and became familiar with the concept of what she calls walk-ins, which is like souls that kind of walk into an existing body and kind of take over. And I don't think that's what happened to me. I think I fall into another category, which is called wanderers, where basically you have a soul that's not from the normal human stock that sort of comes and inhabits a few lifetimes on the planet to try to help us out here.
And you believe yours is Edgar?
Well, I believe that Edgar is part of this wandering in the sense that it's a soul that didn't need to be at this level of spiritual development. You know, it kind of comes in, and the risk you run is karmic entrapment. You know, you come in here not knowing much and not having a whole lot of experience about the ways you can be manipulated and deceived in the physical plane.
Well, karmic entrapment.
And you accrue karma.
Okay, so Edgar accrued karma because...
Absolutely, he did.
Because of the drinking and the mistresses or what?
Well, but you have to look beyond one incarnation, because if you go back through Edgar's series of incarnations, it traces all the way back to, first of all, he was allegedly created for the entity that was his soulmate to copulate with. That was how he was born. And then if you go back to Atlantis, he was Ra-Ta, the priest who basically allegedly built the Great Pyramid with the aid of other people and other forces and was responsible for the migration of the Atlanteans into Egypt.
So is that a good thing?
Land.
Is that a good thing?
Well, it was a good thing up to a point, except that he ended up having problems with women and sexuality where he wanted multiple partners and went against his own teachings of monogamy.
Oh, he and Spitz, Spitzer. He and Spitzer in New York.
So he ended up violating his own code of ethics. It doesn't mean it's an absolute code of ethics necessarily, but if you go out and you're spiritually teaching and then you contradict your own teaching, there's a karmic penalty to pay, which led to him having to take on a series of reincarnations, and that one of the main issues would always be infidelity. Then you have to look at the fact that he also had other incarnations in which further karma was accrued, most notably in the recent past, two lifetimes in a row of a man called John Bainbridge, who was allegedly reincarnated as his own grandson, both times existing as a riverboat gambler, a womanizer, and an alcoholic. And that was the last two lifetimes that he had before he came in as Edgar.
Now,
that's right in the readings.
And you're finding all this information out by looking through the astrology, looking at the charts, because earlier we lost the part where you said your moon is the moon, and you're going to send me that article so people can read
it. Right. Eventually, that's not how it happened. I mean, eventually what happened, I mean, I had certainly been aware of Edgar Cayce when I started to read about esoteric metaphysics.
But where'd you find out all this information about his last lifetimes?
Well, I hung out with somebody who was a really close friend of Gladys Davis Turner, who was the secretary and soulmate.
Yeah, for many, many years.
And so when I lived with this guy for the better part of 9 months, which was kind of like an incubation birth phase, you know, he regaled me with every single story about Edgar that Gladys had ever relayed to him over the course of like a 15 to 17-year friendship. So he had all the inside stuff, all the stuff that you don't get in the books, as well as the stuff you do get in the books. And he had, like, probably 70% of all the Edgar Cayce books, of which there's about 600.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was very knowledgeable, and every night we would talk about some aspect of the Cayce saga, and in that time I basically learned everything. And by that point, I'd moved to Virginia Beach. I was doing psychic readings already. It had broken through 3 years after I started to do all this research. And everybody in Virginia Beach is seeing me as the spitting image of Edgar Cayce when he was my age. And I finally said, after I developed quite an established bond of trust with my higher self, based on numerous prophecies that had come true and guidance that was unerringly accurate and beneficial, I finally got up the gusto to say, well, tell me the answer. And the answer came back in the affirmative that I was, in fact, Edgar Cayce reincarnated, or at least the strongest similarity to him that you're going to get as what we would think of as reincarnation. I literally went and I almost threw up. I was hugging the porcelain in the bathroom.
Why? I mean, because you'd be the only one since his death. You'd be the first one since his death.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm probably what you could call the highest integrity Xerox copy. But yeah, I'm literally just about vomiting because I'm saying, okay, Edgar Cayce said he was going to reincarnate in 1998, and it was the tail end of 1997, and he said he was going to be a liberator of the world, not the liberator, but a liberator. And so all of a sudden, I've gone from having about a year and a half, 2 years worth of experience with this channeling that I thought was totally private, I'd never have to publicize, all of a sudden now, it all clicks into place, and it's like, oh my God, I have this label attached to me, and I am going to be everybody's laughing stock for the rest of my life.
Because people, do they laugh now when they hear you're reincarnated from Edgar Cayce?
Only until they hear me open my mouth and start talking.
And then they back off.
Then they say, wow, there's something here. There's sizzle here. There's a story here. Because I've developed myself to be a good public speaker. I don't use a lot of verbal pauses when I'm talking, and I'm fluent. And I also have a lot of esoteric knowledge. I mean, you can ask me anything, and it's like consulting an encyclopedia.
No, I've found that out already. I'm just trying to think about, if I were speaking for all the audience, and I hope I am. So how old are you?
35. I just turned 35 last Saturday.
So you're 35, and do you have photos of Edgar when he was 35?
Oh yeah. When you go to the website, it's so shocking that some people have a really negative response because it's like it breaks down your resistance. You just say, "Holy Christ!"
So you can make a pretty good case for reincarnation for all those people who don't believe in reincarnation. Can't they just say, "Oh, you kind of look like someone because everybody has a twin." Have you heard that old saying? Everybody has a twin in the world.
Suffice it to say that I've been in touch with the top reincarnation researcher of the 60s and 70s, as well as one of the top reincarnation researchers of arguably the late 90s into the present, and both of them, upon seeing my photograph, said that this was the strongest facial similarity they'd ever seen in a reincarnation case, period.
Okay, well, tell me some of the things you can do that Edgar can do. Give me your strong similarities. And then I want to know if you're going to collect, are you a womanizer?
Edgar. Okay, let me start with the easier question.
Okay.
No, I'm not a womanizer.
Oh, then you cleaned up that karma. Okay. Well,
no, in fact, I've only had, what, 3 girlfriends in my whole life, and I never cheated on anyone. I've never had infidelity.
But does that count if you have a girlfriend you cheat, or do you have to be married and cheat? Maybe you have to wait till you get married to get that karma.
Well, I haven't been in a legal contract marriage, so. But no, I mean, even in the course of just being in a monogamous partnership, I never went behind anybody's back. I never.
And that's cheated. Considered bad karma if you're dating and you cheat.
I would say that if you have a mutual understanding that you're in a monogamous partnership and then you kind of go behind somebody's back without communicating about it, you're accruing karma.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. That's good. I believe that too. That's
I think if you have an open relationship with an understanding that you both want to see other people, then in that context, you're not violating free will.
Good, because so many people go, well, we weren't married. Doesn't matter. I'm like, well, you know, it kind of does.
You know, the binding is the soul, and the marriage should only be an external representation of the bond that's formed.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you don't have that issue, and you've already put away your marijuana, so you've taken care of those two
things. I got 15 years sobriety.
Okay, so what's with sobriety? It's like you're like a big
And that's no, I mean, I did do the meetings. I did AA. I did NA.
For marijuana?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted it bad. When I quit, it was really difficult.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I know big executives who smoke it. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Well, I mean,
why.
In California now, all you got to get is your little $1,000 medical card, and you're good to go. I mean, it's not even that big of a deal anymore. But
I think it's, I mean, I don't want it, because I don't want to lose control ever. I don't want to not, I don't want to be silly. I don't know what it does, and I don't want to know what it does. But I've looked at people who smoke it, and some of them are prosecuting people. That always
hey, I'm not standing here trying to tell you how to live your life. If you,
no,
you
no,
want
no.
to do it, it's,
what I'm,
and I'm
saying
not saying
is,
you're doing it, but
no,
I'm
no,
saying.
No, no. I'm just saying I find it very strange when people who are in high places who could actually put other people in jail for doing it are doing it.
That is ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm going, hey, that's not really cool.
I had a friend in high school who was a congressional page. And he found out from working at Washington that everybody's smoking weed.
I
all
know.
The congressmen, the senators, everybody.
And see, that's really scary to me because I don't know why they need it. I just don't get it. But you have to go into AA for that or something? AAA?
I didn't have to, but I did do the 90 meetings in 90 days because basically, to use druggy parlance, I was jonesing. I needed a fix. I was really hungry for another hit.
Oh my God, you're normal. You just said you were jonesing. You're like so brilliant. I thought, does he know any regular slang? Okay, so you had a jones. Okay, so then what happened? So now, so you don't have
jonesing hard. And,
yeah.
And actually, one of the first things that happened when I was getting clean is that I met this woman from Hungary who was extremely hot, and she had a 54-year-old husband and wanted to have me as her toy boy, and I wouldn't go for it. I was basically terrified of this guy chasing after me, but I also just didn't want to, you know, rat out somebody else's marriage. I mean, I just couldn't get down with that.
Well, that would have been accruing bad karma.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was
so
well aware of karma. I mean, my mother, when I was a little kid, told me every time you do something good for somebody, it's like you're putting a brick on this wall of a building that you're making, and every time you do something bad, you're pulling the bricks away.
So your goal is to really keep it clean. Not only your body, but your mind, spirit, and soul. You're trying to keep it all clean.
I would say that since I'm on the spiritual path, my goal is to evolve in body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely pursue with a great deal of intensity whatever I feel is going to further my advancement.
So you stick to integrity.
Yeah,
so that, okay.
And that advancement basically revolves around planetary service.
Okay, so and what do you do for planetary service? I mean, I know Edgar went to, you know, he went into trance every day and he healed people and he gave great recipes and great, you know, medical diagnosis, and then he would make concoctions and people got healed. I mean, there's just no, you cannot doubt that. If I don't care what kind of atheist or non-believer, if you read any Edgar Cayce or anything about Edgar Cayce, you will see that there's very little you can find wrong with that.
Absolutely, absolutely dedicated, unselfishly, and single-mindedly to serving others.
So that they can just, if you want to make fun of something, don't even go there, because you will be so knocked on your behind when you read those books. You can call him anything you want, but you can't call that a fraud, because he was anything but.
Sure, and I actually started doing clients professionally in July 1998, and within, well, I'd already written my first book by then, which was published on a website called greatdreams.com. It was called Convergence, and that's actually what the name of my movie is now. The last 3 years I've been working on a movie because I realized the only way you're really going to break through this wall of collective social denial about these things is to get it out there in the broadcast and film media. So that's the next big step that needs to be made to get this out of the realm of just, oh, wow, look at this website, or, oh, look at that book in the bookstore.
Well, who are some of the big names that say you are indeed Edgar Cayce?
Uri Geller wrote on his own volition.
Uri is a friend of mine.
Yeah, he wrote on his own volition on his website, David Wilcock is Edgar Cayce.
Uri wrote that?
Yep, he did. Huh. And we didn't even ask him for it. I mean, we ended up, once we found it, we went back and said, hey, could we use this? And he said yes.
I did a documentary on Uri. He was a very good friend of my husband, very, very good friends.
You know, I mean, off the record, I mean, almost everybody I meet at the conferences comes up and talks to me about this.
And why
do they name a name, but I'm not going to name their names because it's confidential.
No, but why do they say it? Why do they say it?
Well, you know, like I said, you got the facial similarity. You have this astonishing astrology similarity.
Okay.
All the inner planets in the same positions at the time of both people's birth.
And by the way, for all you astrologers, our last show, but just when we were trying this before it went out, here David's birthday is 3/8/73. He was in Schenectady, New York, born in Schenectady at 11:16 p.m.
That's right, and that's all you need to know.
And then you can look at that chart for the astrologers.
You can compare it on what's called a comparison chart or a bi-wheel against Edgar Cayce, and prepare to be surprised.
Because it's absolute like a carbon copy, huh?
It's a shocking chart, which is unprecedented in the field of reincarnation research. There is no other example of two charts that mesh together so strongly. In fact, Edgar Cayce, for 127 years after his death, my birthday is the exact time where you get the strongest alignment in the 127 years. I mean, there's no other time I could have been born to better take advantage of that alignment.
Okay, so let's say you're Edgar Cayce. What are you supposed to do besides keep your integrity, not do drugs, not
okay, if I may speak as if I were Edgar, which
yes,
is
please.
One way we can look at this,
yes.
In the last time around, I basically tried to prove that reincarnation was true. That's why there were a lot of readings about reincarnation. I tried to prove the eternal validity of the soul, to use a Seth quote.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to prove that healing arose from the spiritual body precipitating into the physical,
yes.
And that mind is the builder. I tried to go through a wide variety of esoteric concepts to basically turn people on to the fact that there's an unknowable reality, unknowable only to the ego, but then when you expand into your higher self or your greater beingness,
mm-hmm.
you can know a lot more. And so look at what happened, a whole lot of nothing. I mean, granted, you can say that health food to a large degree was created by Edgar Cayce's readings, holistic healing to some degree, some of the homeopathy techniques, certainly many of the alternative remedies. You could argue that the reincarnation case was softened up to a great degree by Cayce, that later followed by like people like Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yeah, but they were doing that in India and in China. And
yeah,
all
and of course,
years,
before
yeah.
Cayce, you still had Blavatsky and you had Rudolf Steiner and people
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
But certainly Cayce was a major influence on spiritual thought. In fact, if you rate people by the number of books that have been published about them, Cayce is ahead of Mary Baker Eddy. He's ahead of the guy that founded the Mormons, Joseph Smith. There's been more books written about Cayce than any other spiritual pioneer. There was a paper, college graduate thesis done on that.
You think it was just his karma to be that famous? I mean, it's like Marilyn Monroe. It was her karma to be Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
famous.
I mean, as we said in the previous discussion, Cayce had a number of highly prominent incarnations on the planet, including, apparently, being the author of the Book of Luke in the Bible.
Oh, you didn't say that. He was? He was
yeah.
the author of Luke in
yeah,
the Bible?
Yeah, he was Lucius of Cyrene. And he hung around with Jesus. He was a wannabe. He basically was following him around, wanting to hang out. And because he'd had eyewitness testimony, he basically was able to write this Book of Luke.
So then when he was...
And also...
I'm sorry, when he was Edgar Cayce, then he wanted to make the rise the dead, just like Christ did, huh? Raise
yeah,
the
you
dead.
Could argue that Cayce's readings definitely had a resurrection component insofar as
yeah.
people that were written off for dead were able to be, rescued.
Yeah, rescued by Cayce, so that
yeah.
that sort of like goes hand in
yeah,
hand.
Yeah, I mean the Cayce
Jesus.
Readings are very controversial because they do ascribe these rather lofty past lives to him. And that's the first self-serving thing that you see most spiritual-type people do is say, well, I was... Cleopatra. I was,
And were they?
One of the apostles. Well, like I was saying before, when you have a famous personality in our history, they form sort of like a template for other souls to fit into, like an archetype. And that means that many people will incarnate with similar personality characteristics. So in that sense, yeah, there are a wide variety of people that fit into the, for example, the various 12 apostles around Jesus, because those are the 12 signs of the zodiac,
yeah,
and they do fit archetypally. So
Knights of the Round Table.
Oh yeah, it's all
thing.
There.
It's all there. It's the same thing, folks. But
and that doesn't mean that Jesus was a fraud, but
no.
It does mean that there was a lot of calibration to make sure that incarnation would have a lot in common with these astrological signs.
Do you think you're the only one right now who is as closest to Edgar Cayce as we can find, or is there somebody else out there?
It's possible that there could be somebody who, I don't know how old he would be now. I mean, if he was born in 1998, he'd be what, like 10?
Mm-hmm.
There could very well be somebody that was born in 1998 that, fulfills that aspect of Cayce's future incarnation prophecy. Because he said Ra-Ta the priest, which was his Atlantean lifetime, where he allegedly co-designed the Great Pyramid with a prior incarnation of Jesus, and that's all in the Cayce readings, Thoth Hermes Trismegistus, was his business partner, so to speak, on the pyramid. And that was allegedly one of Jesus' past lives.
But those pyramids weren't built by men. They're built by UFO people, right?
They were, yeah. I mean, Ra-Ta and
star
Hermes
people.
Essentially were liaising with a higher...
Star people,
extraterrestrial life form called Ra, yeah.
They were Ra.
Yeah.
That's life form. So they were basically, some people could be called Martians, aliens, or star people. Am I right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very limiting when you start looking at the fact that the consciousness itself is a field throughout the universe. It's very limiting to say that there's only life on this planet.
No, yeah. I mean, can you imagine any man, any of us, any civilization that we know today could build those things? No.
Definitely not. There's no crane that's strong enough to lift even a single block of the pyramid.
And they're perfectly in measurement.
Yeah, the only way that you could do it is with a gravity nullification technology, which is a technology that we don't have in the open, acknowledged world. It may be in the black ops, but certainly not in anything that we have out in the open.
People still don't believe in the Moses thing, where they're squishing clay with their feet and
his staff, he could turn it into a snake and that kind of stuff. Yeah,
it's like, okay, Moses was a movie, folks. They did not make those, put those big pyramids together and have them off. It just aggravates me that they're that believable. But anyway, so go ahead and finish. So there may be another Edgar Cayce-ish person out there.
Oh, I would never try to say I'm the exclusive one and only. No way.
Well, was
because soul doesn't work that way, in my understanding.
Your understanding, there are bits of the soul, like the particles.
We are addicted to this concept of individuality, and it's not really true. I mean, as soon as you start going into the next density above the Earth's density, the one we're in now, which is called fourth density, you start having social memory complexes form, which are basically where you have group souls that begin to think and behave as one entity. And then as you go higher and higher, you get to the point where you have, ultimately, the entire universe is one being, and it all recoalesces at the end of this grand cycle of creation.
Where does God come in?
God is the universe. God is everywhere, every when, every person, the light, the love, the one infinite creator. It is everything there is.
So when we think of, like, when I think of a separate God, God is different apart from all of
us? If you've objectified God as some entity outside yourself, then you've missed the point.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point is that you can look into the face of the mirror and see the Creator. You can look into the faces of others and see the Creator, and you can look at all the environment around you and see the creator.
So when people pray, they're just praying to themselves?
They're praying to an aspect of themselves that's further ahead in linear time as we would measure it, which is moving back in time to help them with their spiritual evolution.
So do you believe in angels and all this stuff?
Absolutely.
So who are the angels then? Where are they?
They could be entities anywhere in fourth, fifth, or sixth density. Usually the 7D don't really mess with us, and that's the last gateway that you have before you go back to oneness, which is the octave, the eighth density. So basically, angelics could be anywhere between 4D through 6D. And 4D is where you learn unconditional love, 5D is where you learn wisdom, and 6D is where you, on very simple terms, fuse love and wisdom and begin to become aware of timelessness. In 7D, you have an awareness of what's called foreverness or timelessness. And then in 8D, you go back to what's called intelligent infinity.
Where are we?
We are in 3D, in which the lesson of this density is to choose whether we're going to serve ourselves or serve others.
It's better to serve others.
Well, it's better to serve others and be able to not be railroaded in the process.
And serve yourself. So could people that are just, like, I'm just me. I'm not Edgar Cayce. So could there be more of me, and why? Why would they want more
of
me?
Well, if you imply that by you saying you're not Edgar Cayce that you're somehow less than, you've missed the point. Because in the one infinite creation, we are all one. And there is no greater than or less than. Every soul is precious beyond measure.
Well, I tell you, look, let's put it this way then. Let's just pretend there's like five street people in the streets of L.A. And they've just given up. Why do we need 15 more of each one of those people?
Because those souls will ultimately be as purified as any other great master, great teacher at any point in our entire evolution of the universe.
All right, and then why do we need 15 more Hitlers?
Hitler is another example of a soul that chose the negative path of domination, manipulation, and control over others for the benefit of the self. And those souls will eventually either dissolve back into the background energy of the universe and basically just feed the universe by their sort of, residual energy, or they flip over to positive somewhere between usually 5D and 6D, and they end up going positive. And they basically realize the error in their ways, and they have sort of like the prodigal son homecoming and turn around their whole lives.
So, and I'm really trying to understand this. So, because it goes past being just reincarnated, you're being the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, because then if you are, and you're obviously teaching, you're this high-minded child. I mean, child, you're 35. You're old as my.
Well, I look young. I look like I'm in my early 20s.
Yeah. All right. So then you're this really brilliant young man, and you have all this knowledge, which is a lot of knowledge for your age. I mean, you really do, and you've got piled and stacked, and they're like jam packed, and I can tell. So and we're all just hearing this. I mean, we're all kind of used, as I said, to the old way of reincarnation. You die, you go through the tunnel. I mean, personally, I would never like to be reincarnated again, ever. I would never like to come to the world again, planet, ever.
Yeah, I mean, once you've learned the game, once you've learned the point, which is that this is all a big virtual reality machine whose purpose is to teach you, okay, when you preserve people's free will, you move forward, and when you infringe on people's free will, you get smacked down.
So that's why
once you've learned that, why would you want to do it again?
Well, that's why I'm asking, why would they need to be 15 more? I don't like it here particularly. I mean, I don't want to leave or die or commit to, I don't mean that, but I mean, there
well, you know, the dislike of the incarnative experience is one of the fundamental things that happens when you start to awaken to what the game is.
It's like, I'm not exactly charmed with this place.
I don't in any way call it a game to diminish its value or its importance. I call it a game because the fact of the matter is that it's like cause and effect, where there's a domino effect, where if you're going to do something self-serving, you've set off those dominoes, and then later on this karma blows up in your face, and you're like, why did that happen? And if you don't see the other dominoes falling that eventually lead to you having a car crash or something, then you don't get it.
So it's not a bad thing to that one. Because everyone goes, are you crazy? I'm like, no, I just don't want to come back. And they're all, oh, I want to come back. I'm like, why? I don't get it. Why? And so I'm always odd man out.
We are in a very unique period in our history, because we are not only at the end of a 26,000-year cycle, we're at the end of three of them. And this is basically the end of third density on Earth, meaning that the Earth itself is moving into a higher frequency, and we either have the option to kind of vibe in on unconditional love and stay in the Earth frequency, or we can continue to resist love and attempt to continue to control people, and in so doing, we're going to be shattered by it. We're going to be shattered by the vibrational increase, and that's what's happening. It's happening to social institutions. It's happening to people on a personal level, and you can either basically get in gear.
Okay, dumb it down a bit and tell me what the personal level looks like, because you're pretty darn smart. Dumb it down just a little bit.
The personal level essentially boils down to the fact that the original thought of the universe is love. That was how the universe was created. Love is actually the closest we can come in a word to describing the essence of how universal energy vibrates and functions. Love you could define in physics as the tendency for bodies to draw together. Love is an attractive force. It's a force that basically causes things to coalesce and move together. So when two people fall in love, it moves them closer and closer together until ultimately they make love, which is the ultimate sharing between two people. So love is actually a generative, operative, energetic force that the universe is constructed from. Therefore, the universe does have a bias towards love, and the fundamental nature of how karma works on our personal level is that when we move towards love, which is loving yourself and loving others, it's important that you not exclude yourself from your love, or else you're still not getting it. And that's what Cayce's problem was. He excluded the love for himself at the expense of loving others. You have to balance both of those things to be most expedient on your path. When you can do that, then what will happen is that more and more your reality will speak back to you of love, and you will feel loved, and you will have greater success and greater potential.
The more you love yourself.
That being said, you also will, on a higher level, choose initiation for yourself. And initiation represents experiences that basically have the equivalent of reaching into the lottery and pulling out those little lottery tickets that are blowing around inside your personal lottery that say, oh, look what I found here. It turns out that you're actually very selfish if you're being confronted about your mother. It turns out that you actually have a great deal of difficulty with being alone. It turns out that you have a real issue with driving too fast on the highway and passing people, et cetera, et cetera. So what it's going to do, your higher self, is it says, hey, I want to maximize as much evolution as I'm going to get out of this lifetime, especially because we're at the end of the cycle. So let me deliberately contrive all these events that are going to push all these buttons to see if we can heal them while we still got time.
So in other words, try and love your mother. Slow down, right?
Exactly. Whatever is right in front of your face right now is your spiritual issue, and you should deal with it if you want to move through these things as fast as possible.
Well, you know what's bothering a lot of people right now, before we wind up, because, I mean, you're really interesting. You have some really great answers. What about all the loneliness that's going on right now? That's all I hear. I'm lonely, I'm lonely, I'm lonely.
The central issue that is underneath everyone's spiritual problem is what I call the original wound. It came to me from the readings. It is the illusion that God has abandoned us.
Mm-hmm.
Every other human problem that we're ever going to face, or psychological issue, or addictive behavior, stems out of that original wound.
Mm-hmm.
So every single time you're finding yourself in some sort of state that is unpleasant, whether it's that you feel lonely, or that you're having a drug addiction, or an alcohol problem, or anything, go back and recognize how whatever your experiences in life are have made you feel as if God has just sort of turned his back and walked away, his or her back, or its back, walked away and left you out here in the jungle to hack through by yourself with a machete and nothing but your willpower and your true grit. Because in the deeper reality, this reality nurtures you, it supports you, it will bring to you the resources and the people that you need when you need it for your higher evolution. So if you're going through a loneliness period, it may be to help burn out the codependency, which is something so many people have a problem with. We end up identifying God as the other person rather than within.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see the other person as your God and you become dependent on them for your sense of well-being, your higher self will very likely create situations where you're going to end up alone for a prolonged period of time so that you can heal it by basically dealing with the silence. And then you don't want to be a noise addict. You don't want to surround yourself with radios and TVs all the time. You want to actually get into the silence, get into the grief, get into the weeping, lie in bed, grieve until you've gotten through it. Because when you are honest enough with yourself to admit that, hey, I'm really in pain and it really effing hurts and I don't like it at all,
mm-hmm.
and you can go to that space and stay in that space and cry it out of yourself, a funny thing happens. You end up finding the trap door at the bottom of the bottomless pit. And suddenly it's not so dark and there's a new dawn and you suddenly say, wait a minute, you know, look at all these things that I've been having happen to me that I just don't even think of because I'm so busy focusing on the negative. You know, in the left hand you have death, in the right hand you have life. Both of them are totally real and you can totally prove that either one exists by what you choose to focus on.
Wow. Well, you're the first person in a long time that's kept me quiet. I just like listening. That's pretty
good. Once I get going in broadband mode, that's what happens.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, we've gone through an hour and a half because our first one just kind of went away on us. But and I kind of don't want to lose this one. Believe me, folks, that was very still was a very strange incident. And it's just as well. I actually like this show a lot better.
We got my pineal gland fully fired up for this one. So
I was functioning
at the higher frequency. Whereas the first time I was kind of like, yeah, got to do this radio show.
No, I mean, you never have to do it. I love one of my guests, Rick Bormel, always says he does it because it's his way of serving God. And that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying that, I mean, I'm in the whole time we've been talking, I'm rendering out this video called 2012 Enigma that I'm putting out free on the web, which has got all this stuff that I've done, all this really amazing information. And so I've just been working my tail off, and it's like, I'm tirelessly dedicated to serving the planet, and I never spare any effort in my dedication to it, including my diet, exercise, sobriety. You know, I don't drink coffee, I don't smoke, I don't do anything like that.
Well, and let me tell you, I don't think you're going to be reincarnating anytime soon.
Well, you know, I got the exit ramp in mind, and you know, there's two ways to get out of here. There's what you could call the field goal or the touchdown, I'm going for the touchdown. You know, I want to graduate as highly as possible.
Oh man, me too. I mean, the thought of it is like, oh no.
Well, I mean, just the fact that you've associated with Jess Stern and with Ruth Montgomery and Hugh Lynn Casey.
They fought. They found me. I didn't find them.
Well,
I loved it.
But on a higher level, your higher self is scripting and directing all these little ballet dances of the chess pieces on the chessboard
so that the right
people get to meet each other.
I'm so honored. And Ruth Montgomery, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross called me to do her last interview.
Oh, that's great.
And I mean, I just had the best teachers. They're truly the best. I've had the best metaphysical. And then my husband, yeah. I mean, my second.
I mean, I don't think it's a violation to suppose, in my mind, that you are most likely an angelic or an ET soul that's volunteered to be human, but you certainly didn't need to be. And we're tired of the game, you know,
because
we come from a realm which is, you know, the average everyday existence is like 100 times more powerful than the best orgasmic experience with another person you'll ever have in your life.
Exactly.
And that's just standard function. And then we come down here, and the body is not physiologically wired for ecstasy. In order to have ecstatic experiences, we need chemicals to secrete, and we only have a limited supply, which means we're only going to be able to experience ecstatic consciousness in short bursts. Even what the samadhi that these masters try to get to when they're meditating, it still is a relatively steady state of consciousness, which is why the Zen saying is, after enlightenment, you chop wood and carry water, right?
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
I'm like, whatever, folks.
And so I look for consistency and stability in my life rather than these wild, mind-blowing experiences all the time.
Yeah, it's like, okay, what? Why is that supposed to be so terrific? You know?
So when we come in from these higher realms where it's like being on the ultimate psychedelic acid trip all the time.
That's what I said. I don't need drugs. I'm already out of control, you know.
But then down here, it's like even the realm that the Earth is moving into, which we haven't shifted over into yet, that gets into the whole 2012 thing.
Yeah.
Even that place is 100 times, not 100%, but 100 times, which is 1,000% more harmonious than what life is like here now.
Yeah, this is really a trip.
This is where you learn by getting your face shoved in it.
Oh.
And it's one after another, because as I said, your higher self is very aggressive in trying to ladle on as much initiation as possible to make sure that you're going to make the highest amount of growth possible. So yes, you're going to be shaken and stirred, you're going to be challenged to your core, but you're never going to be given more than you can handle.
That's what they say.
However, I also paraphrase Edgar Cayce by saying, if you're not on your knees right now, you're not paying attention.
That's true. Boy, just watch it. That's all I can say. When you think you're dancing as fast as you can, thinking how the mighty fall. So that's what I can tell you. I've watched that happen a million
times.
Well,
and ultimately, all this falling away is the illusion that has kept you embodied in this separated notion of self.
Yeah, and I watch people do it all the time, and I'm like, okay, quit dancing so fast. You're going to see. You're going to get dizzy. You're going to spin and fizzle right out. But, you know, I'm not the big intellect you are. I just sort of say it in, like, everyday terms, like, whatever.
Well,
I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you will join us again.
Sure, it would be my pleasure.
I mean, it was great. As I said, you're one of the few people who kept me quiet. I actually listened and learned. That was a good thing. That's very good. I've taken my lesson well.
Well, you had initiation today.
Okay. Thank you, David. Thank you very much. And listen, would you tell the people your website so we can...
My website is divinecosmos.com. Mm-hmm. The movie I'm doing, which should be out next year, is Convergence, and it mm-hmm. should be a theatrical release if everything goes well.
Oh, great.
So there's a lot of sizzle out there. There's the 2012 Enigma video I've just done you can get to. I just put up a page with a bunch of conferences and a cruise in November coming up. There's all sorts of things on the website that are free. There's audio downloads. There's, as I said, there's two videos, lots of stuff to check out.
All right, well, that's great, and thank you so much. If you hold on the line just a second, I'm going to say goodnight to everybody.
Absolutely.
And I want to talk to you for just a second.
It's been an honor.
Okay, thanks, David.
Thank
hold
you.
On.